Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside David Beauclair and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Hey, good morning. Good to be with you guys.
Good to have you with us. Appreciate you taking time to join us. So we're talking Titans here, and obviously you took down the Jags. You handled business there. Now looking ahead to the Steelers. What do you make, Gentry, of where this offense is right now based on the personnel that's available? And as you look at it, what's the most concerning part to you about this offense at the moment?
You know, I mean, it's easy to say the injuries, right, given what they're missing at the skill positions. But to me, it might be the pass protection still, and that's what I would have said a few games into the season, and it's probably what I would still say now, and that's what makes it the most concerning is, even when you've had the full complement of linemen that you want to have out there, still really hasn't gone away. It's been a problem most of the season, and if you look at that offense, the last two games, they haven't had a pass longer than 24 yards. And in the last game, that was a screen to Jeff Swaim, which, as you guys noted, I don't think Jeff Swaim would have been your choice for the longest pass of the game against the Jaguars. But, a lot of that has to do – I mean, obviously you're missing a lot of guys at receiver that are able to maybe make some plays, but I think most of that is the fact the quarterback just hadn't had time to do it. And that's something that even when you had Derrick Henry, that was a problem. So that, to me, has gotten from – a rare occurrence early in the year to now something that's just chronic with this team and kind of who they are. And it's a problem that I think will last even when they are healthy.
So that was going to be my question. Do you have any hope that as guys start to, Nate Davis back in there now, Taylor Lewan, getting healthier, I would assume, as the season goes on with more strength in that knee, do you have any confidence that gets better at this point, or is this just going to be what it is with that group as they move forward?
I'm not sure that – I think it could get better week to week based off the opponent and how they want to play him. I mean, for example, the Jets get 7 sacks in that game, but I think a lot of that had to do with A.J. Brown and Julio Jones being out of that game, and I think the Jets knew they could spread 10, even 11 guys across the line of scrimmage and bring these pretty exotic pressures, and, they didn't worry about a receiver hurt being able to get separation and hurt him up the field. So I think that does – play into it, but the fact is, I mean, you're playing a Jacksonville team that looked like it, quite frankly, had would have rather been anywhere else on Sunday. They just were not into the game, and they still got all kinds of pressure on Tannehill, and that's concerning. It's concerning that even in a situation where you really should be able to handle it and you should give your quarterback a relatively easy afternoon, you still weren't able to do it.
Gentry, sticking with the offense, much intrigue around Derrick Henry's situation, of course, and understandably so. But assume for a second Henry doesn't come back. Dontrell Hilliard and Deontay Foreman, good enough combination to win you some games in the playoffs?
it's a good question because I do feel like, based off what they showed in the New England game, There is some potential there, but it's just they just can't get it going on the run game in terms of I think they divvied up the carries in this last game, and I don't think anybody had an average of better than like 3.6 yards per carry, and it's just they're going to keep running it, and I do kind of like the by-committee approach. It's going to be the one thing I will say is I think Jeremy McNichol's coming back. It's probably going to take time from Hilliard, wouldn't you think?
Yes.
But I think they like Deontay Foreman more as the every down guy. That makes a little more sense to me. And they've shown some flashes, and I think the O-line has held up pretty well at times. But, I mean, this offense is just not very good without Derrick Henry. I mean, we've seen it now for about a month, and I think the defense has played very well at times to cover for that. But without Derrick Henry, I don't give this team much of a chance in the playoffs. I hate to be negative like that, but it's just a fact.
Yeah, we've been talking, too, about the possibility of getting the number one seed, what that might mean. One thing we haven't talked is number one seed, does Mike Vrabel win Coach of the Year?
I mean, I think he's definitely in on it. When you look at what they've dealt with injury wise, and you know the stat about all the having to play all these players, I think so. I've kind of thought all along he was somebody that should be in contention for that. I think if the Patriots go on and get that top spot, I think Bill Belichick's going to be tough to beat for it. But I think right now, and you guys kind of referenced it, the team to beat in the AFC is Kansas City. That to me, if I'm saying right now, I think the Titans would do pretty well to get the two seed and get to host a couple of games.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Gentry, this is an interesting game coming up for Titans fans on Saturday night between the Patriots and the Colts, and there's been a lot of debate on our text line about this. Who should Titans fans be rooting for in that game? The Patriots to win and basically take out the Colts from the division, or the Colts to win and give you a better shot at that one seed if you're the Titans? Who are you rooting for if you're a Titans fan on Saturday night?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I heard you guys discussing earlier, and I truly didn't have an answer for that. I think, yeah, no, if the Colts lose, you can go ahead and wrap up the division pretty quickly, so there's no pressure on you the rest of the way against, you know, some games that could be tricky against the 49ers and Dolphins. And, you know, I think it would be nice for the Titans to finally go to Houston to end a regular season and not just have to win that game with everything riding on it. So if the Colts lose, you know you're not going to be faced with that. And like I say, I think the Titans are in the mix for that one seed, but I wouldn't bet on it. I don't think they're going to get the one seed. They're still dealing with a lot of injuries and things week to week that in order to get to that point. So go ahead and wrap up the division. I'd say root for the Patriots.
Similarly along those lines, a lot of talk during the open week about Titans having the easiest remaining schedule. You know, certainly Jacksonville was a cakewalk, but now you go to Pittsburgh, and going to Pittsburgh is fraught with a certain amount of peril always. You got San Francisco, which has played better of late. Miami, which has certainly played better of late. Which of these next three games looks most problematic to you?
You know, I would say, like you said, I would say going to Pittsburgh, because I think we're all just conditioned to say that. You know, when the schedule comes out and you see a game in Pittsburgh in mid to late December, you win, right? That's going to be a tough game. But with the way things are going for the Steelers right now, you know, I'm not so sure. The 49ers, to me, and I understand they're going to have to travel in a short week, and there's a lot of things that could work in the Titans' advantage the way that game sets up. But the 49ers have shown here, their last win this weekend was the kind of game where they showed the ability to make plays with some very serious talent that's going to be there for them in the postseason. There are certain teams where you see this time of year where they have certain guys who step up and make plays. George Kittle, you know, some of these guys. And I think the 49ers, I think, have some big-time ability to really be dangerous in the postseason. So I think that's probably the toughest game remaining on the schedule. But I, at the same time, I think it helps the Titans a lot. That game's on a Thursday night, though, and the 49ers are going to have to come all the way this far to play it. But I don't – look, with the way the Titans are right now, banged up as they are, this is just – they're just trying to stay afloat to get healthy for the postseason. That's where we're at right now with this team. And if they can get healthy, they're going to have a chance. If they don't, then I'm not so sure they do.
Gentry, last thing for you here. Obviously, today also the beginning of the early signing period in college football as well. What intrigues you the most about this recruiting cycle for both Tennessee and Vanderbilt?
Yeah, you know – both classes pretty good. If you go look at the 24/7 has the composite rankings. If you go look in the rankings for the SEC classes right now, Vanderbilt's not at the bottom, guys. They're 10, 11, yeah, Somewhere in there. It's pretty good. Now, some of that is just sheer numbers. They're signing, I think they had 24, 25 guys, something like that. So the numbers help them in terms of the rankings. But hey, you know, when Vanderbilt's not 13, 14 in the conference, I think they've done a pretty good job. If you look at the class, they're filling a lot of needs, and there's a lot of – they just needed to sign a lot of guys to kind of get some players and bulk up that roster, and I think they are. I think that, so from Vanderbilt's perspective, I think they're going to come away from this. It's a pretty successful signing day. I think Tennessee, you know, I think the expectations are a lot different when you're Tennessee than they are Vanderbilt. And, you know, middle of the pack in the SEC is good. It's fine. But I still say, you know, and guys, with signing day, this is all. We could look back on this in 3 years, and there's all kinds of playmakers, and they don't know what to make of it right now. But from the standpoint of rankings right now, you know, look, I'm not blown away from by where Tennessee is. I feel like if they really want to start seriously challenging it, starts at the top of the conference, they need to start pulling off classes like what Texas A&M is doing right now. Texas A&M's got a lot of buzz. They're one of the top. They're right up there with Georgia and Alabama among the top classes in the country. And you want to get serious about competing with those powerhouse programs in the league, you're going to have to start probably putting together classes like that. But this early in Tennessee's, this early for Josh Heupel at Tennessee, it's fine. It's pretty good.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Gentry, great stuff as always, brother. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Absolutely. Gentry.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Gentry had to say there. Get to more of your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We all know many of our neighbors have been hurting this week following the deadly tornadoes that have ravaged both Kentucky and Tennessee early Saturday morning. And all of us at 1025 The Game and Cromwell Media are lending a helping hand to those in need through Blood Assurance, the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee, and the Western Kentucky Tornado Relief Fund, and the National Predators as well. Head on over to 1025thegame.com/help to see how you can help today. Once again, that's thegamenashville.com/help. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Corner Pub downtown this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. You can join them from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. live at Corner Pub downtown at 151 Fifth Avenue North prior to the Titans taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The NFL pregame show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical and Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Thanks to Gentry Estes for joining us in the last segment. We talked a little bit earlier about the offensive line for the Titans. Doesn't seem to be a whole lot of confidence for Gentry that it's going to get a ton better. Do you have any confidence that pass blocking this Titans offensive line gets any better as they head down the stretch here?
You're 13 games into the season. I mean, you are what you are at this point. And for the Titans, that's good enough to have won 9 games, right?
Yep.
That's good enough to have won games without Derrick Henry and without with all kinds of moving parts on that offensive line. You're not going to reinvent the wheel and suddenly become a dominant pass blocking team in this case. So it's up to the Titans to figure out ways to win games against defenses, against teams that are going to be trying to take advantage of the fact that you're not a great pass blocking team. I think it's as simple as that. This staff does a good job, I think, at being honest with itself about what the team is and what the challenge is from a week to week basis. You know, you can contrast that with some, you know, like the Ken Wisenhunt period, for example. I thought that staff was terrible at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, Mike Munchak's staff, I think they were sort of, you know, we're going to do what we do and, you know, not worry about anything else. And that didn't always work out well for them either, particularly when they had injury issues there. I think this staff does a good job of being truthful in their own evaluation of things. And so they'll give themselves a chance to I do think, you know, I've said, and I think, you know, Gentry said it too, you know, you're conditioned to think Pittsburgh in late season, that's a trouble spot, and you know Pittsburgh's going to be bringing pressure, right? Like, so this will be sort of a telling game, I think, to show whether this you know, whether this team can hold up and find ways to make enough plays to win a game and against what they're going to be facing a lot of, I think, probably as long as Derrick Henry remains out of action.
So I want to throw your question out that you had to Gentry back to you, and that is the job that Mike Vrabel has done this year. Obviously, they're 9-4. They're the 2 seed in the AFC right now. The 1 seed still on the table, even with all the injuries that they've had. How much love, how much conversation do you think should be around Mike Vrabel and Coach of the Year in the NFL this year?
I think there should be a good amount of love. I'm a big believer. You know, Coach of the Year almost always goes to somebody who engineered a big improvement from the year before. And, you know, if the Patriots win 12 games, that's 5 more than they won last year. And with a rookie quarterback and all that, and like Gentry said, if they're the number one seed, it's going to be tough for people not to vote for Belichick. But I'm a believer that it's harder to keep a team good than it is to make a team good.
Yep.
And, you know, this team won 11 games last year, has a chance to win 11 or more this year, given all the issues, all the injury, you know, all the things we've talked about. I think I know Vrabel is mentioned in a lot of the Coach of the Year discussion. I don't think he's mentioned nearly prominently enough, and I think this is. This has been a masterful day. If this team runs the table and wins 13 games, I don't know how you can't give it to them. At 12 or 11, it's going to be really tough to not give it to them. But it's almost like people are looking for this team to lose a couple games so they don't have to talk about Vrabel in this regard, and I'm not sure why. I mean, everybody deals with things along the way, but the ability to navigate those sorts of things seems like a real positive in coaching to me.
I would say so, and you know, it's one of those things too where, you know, Kingsbury's been getting a lot of love from Arizona, deservedly so. They've done a great job this year. I think Sunday Night Football put out a poll like 2 or 3 weeks ago about Coach of the Year, and they listed off candidates, and Vrabel wasn't even in their list. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what are y'all watching this year? Like, you're not seeing how many – like, you lost a legitimate MVP candidate in Derrick Henry. Like, how many other teams lose an MVP candidate and still keep on chugging right along? Like, it's – I think Mike Vrabel deserves a lot of credit for what we've seen this year.
Like, no team has ever won 6 in a row against playoff teams from the year before. You know, like there's a lot that has happened with this team that just doesn't happen. And you know, the record-setting number of players, and you know, so on and so on. It was apparent early on, probably. What, this is Vrabel's fourth year. It was apparent in his second year that this staff is the best I've ever seen at dealing with injuries. And yep. then this year, of course, has just taken it to a whole different level. I mean, it's absurd.
Oh, it is. And, you know, look, Vrabel, we saw it again last week. He's got his moments where he's prickly with the media, and he can be, you know, difficult. And we've had some fans voice some frustration with the way he deals with the media this week on the text line. And that thing is what it is. You're going to see that with a lot of coaches throughout the league. I don't think anybody can really deny he's done a pretty good job this year, and next year is the last year in his contract. I would not be surprised if at some point this offseason there is a contract extension with Mike Vrabel.
You know, the whole thing with that Cunningham thing, I have sort of come to believe that you know, Vrabel doesn't have the best poker face. Yeah. And like, when he gets in that frame of mind, particularly on a Friday, there were things that happened in practice Wednesday or Thursday or something in the trainer's report that had him on edge. And, and I go back to – I flashed back to February. I don't know if you recall. I seem to recall talking about it with you and Joe on here. You know, he did a sort of an off-season status update with the media and was really just a sourpuss from start to finish. And I thought back to that, and it occurred to me, like, by that point in the off-season – he and John Robinson had probably had some pretty extensive personnel meetings at that point. And no doubt Robinson had said to him, we're going to be cutting this guy, we're going to be cutting this guy, we're going to be – and I'm sure in that moment, you know, Vrabel was like, well, we're going to stink. Yeah. You know, if you're taking all those guys off my team, we're going to stink. Like, how am I going to win games? And that – you know, that at that point of year, part of his job should be – you know, helping create excitement and enthusiasm among the fan base for the coming year. And he just couldn't do it in that moment because he, you know, he just knew what was coming in terms of the personnel moves. And I think he was probably really fearful of what, you know, what was coming with Jacksonville on Sunday. And you know, they got through it. He was really good Sunday after the game. He was really good Monday. Like, it was sort of like,
relief.
You know, you can read him. The more I'm around him, the more I think you can read him pretty well and know when he feels, because he had been on a pretty good run in terms of his media attitude there for a while. And I think something spooked him last week, though, no question about it.
Maybe it was just Glennon. He saw Glennon out there. Said, you know what, tired of this guy. Although he seems to be best friends with Glennon now after the game Sunday. And
yeah. I mean, he
ready for his question Monday too.
He doesn't seem to get that. Like, look, he's the only one speaking on behalf of the team on big picture issues. You make a big player acquisition, I don't care if he's not practicing till next week. Zach Cunningham was news Thursday and Friday last week. You need to talk about that. Like, somebody needs to make him understand that at some point. But that's okay. And, you know, it got a lot of run. A lot of people have had a lot of fun with it the last few days. So in this day and age, that's always something in its own right.
Play Silly Underdog Picks today. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week for a chance to win tickets to an upcoming sporting event or concert. Go to thegamenashville.com for more details and to play. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Got more of your thoughts to get to on our text line as well. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here on this Wednesday morning. Robbie Stanley alongside David Beauclair from SI.com. Michelle Knezovic with us here on this Wednesday morning. Take your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Andrew texting in, guys, no one feels sorry for the media. I don't need a cheerleading coach. I want Vrabel to win much more than being nice to everyone.
That's exactly right. I've never had any illusions about that either.
That is correct.
Like, you know, people like to complain about press box conditions or things like that. Like, no one cares. I tell them all the time. No one cares.
Just suck it up, do the job, and watch Vrabel continue to win.
That's right. And, I mean, he's done that. No losing seasons.
He's definitely done that. I'll be honest. We've talked about this a couple times, but I remember thinking to myself when they fired Mularkey, I was like, so you just fired the coach that won a playoff game for the first time in more than a decade, and you're bringing in somebody that has not been a head coach before in the NFL. They missed the playoffs his first year. You're 2-4 the next year with Marcus Mariota at quarterback, and I'm thinking, well, that was blown by John Robinson. And all of a sudden, Tannehill comes in. We know what's happened since then. Everything's turned around. It is, I will say, some of the in-game decisions and some of the, to your point, the way he handles things, I've been pretty impressed by what we've seen from Mike Vrabel.
And you know, he got some run, a week and a half ago with the tweet at the officials over the rule book and things. But that's, you know, that's one of those things, like, imagine the time and effort it takes to know the rule book inside and out.
Yeah.
And we can all sit here and say, well, that's part of a coach's job. Yeah, it is. I've worked with a lot of coaches, and most of them don't know the rule book inside and out. Jeff Fisher knew the rule book inside and out. I'm pretty confident Mike Vrabel knows the rule book inside and out. And there, you know, like, I'd never heard anyone say it until he did. couple years ago that, you know, if you know the rules, you know how to take advantage of them, which I thought was a really interesting approach. Like, I think I think most people learn the who will learn the rule book inside and out do so to make sure they don't get screwed at some point.
Yep.
You know, his approach I thought was even more fascinating. And, you know, I go back to when John Robinson got the GM job, I'm convinced he sort of had his list. Like, when I get to hire a head coach, these are some guys I'm interested in. And Vrabel had to be at or near the top of that list. And I'm convinced that part of what happened after the 2017 season is Vrabel got a couple interviews, or got at least one. I know he interviewed in Indianapolis, and that was after 1 year as a defensive coordinator, and it wasn't a particularly good year.
Yep.
And I think Robinson looked at it and thought to himself, if I don't hire this guy now, I'm never going to get the chance.
Yep.
And went ahead and made the move that as good as that Mularkey was a good coach, probably, I think, certainly deserved another season. But John Robinson thought, and probably rightfully so, that Mike Vrabel will be a better head coach, and he had to, that was a pretty interesting move, all in all, the way that it played out. I think he probably figured he was going to be able to give Mularkey at least one more year, and if things got better, then great, then you ride with him. But he wasn't confident that things were going to get significantly better than they were in 2017 if he didn't make that move. And here we are. You know, Vrabel looks like a coach who's going to be here for a long time now.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coy in Clarksville texting in. Is anyone else worried about Taylor Lewan? He's supposed to be a top five left tackle. He's not playing that way. He's got a $12.9 million cap hit next year. Should we look elsewhere? We fired everyone on defense and turned it around. Could the same be done for the offensive line? It's coming from Coy in Clarksville.
Absolutely, particularly when you figure next year is going to be time to get AJ Brown a contract extension, right? Like, yep. you're gonna have to pay somebody else. This is the way I look at it with Taylor Lewan. I think of it as a bully, if you will. And you know what happens when you stand up to a bully, right? They back down. That's the classic tale. And I don't mean that Taylor Lewan personally is a bully, but
right.
Taylor Lewan as a football player, He sort of bullied the game his whole life, right? You're not supposed to be that big and that athletic and that nimble and do the things he did. And so for years he has sort of bullied the game. And he talked about it. He said this knee injury was the first significant injury he's had in his life and the first real surgery he's had and all that. So it's like finally the game of football stood up to Taylor Lewan and hit him back a little bit. And now all of a sudden, it's like he feels every last ache and pain in a different way than he used to. And he gets, he gets a little scared when the knee hurts or whatever. And it's, he's understood, I guess, he's faced his football mortality, if you will, and it's sort of changed his perspective. And I don't know if he can get back to being the Lewan that he had been for so long. And he's certainly not getting younger either. Like at a certain point, and we've seen it with John Robinson, right? At pretty much every contract he does. He doesn't intend to get these guys to the, if it's a 4-year deal, it's more likely a 2-year deal in his mind and whatnot. And Lewan's now 30 years old, which is not necessarily as old as it is at other positions, but it's old when you're talking about the kind of money that you're going to be paying him for the coming seasons.
Well, look, there's a decision to make with Taylor Lewan. I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, at this point, I think you got to throw Roger Saffold into that category.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
So the offensive line.
And Ben Jones.
I mean, yeah, for sure.
You can't they're all in their 30s. I mean, at some point you have to start getting younger there.
Right, and that's the thing. I think those are all going to be on the table for the Titans this offseason in terms of decisions that they could make to save money and to have enough money elsewhere to sign guys like Harold Landry. I mean, there's a lot of maneuvering that John Robinson is going to have to do. I guess my question is to those that are just ready to move on from Taylor Lewan, no questions asked. Well, that's fine,
but
who's going to play left tackle?
Yeah.
Because we've seen them draft some offensive linemen the last couple of years. That's not gone very well. So who's playing left tackle for you next year if it's not going to be Taylor Lewan?
And that's, you know, that's a big part of the problem, because the Isaiah Wilson pick was meant, you know, he was to be paired with Nate Davis, and they were going to be the right side of the line for however many years to come. And that and so last year, or this year in the draft, in the 2021 draft, the Titans should have been able to start addressing the future of the left side of the line. And they didn't do it, right? They went and got Dylan Radins to play right tackle again, and now we're not even sure Dylan Radins is a right tackle still. Yep. So you still haven't. You know, Radins might be Roger Saffold's replacement at left guard, right? I mean, so you're this is one thing that is going to very much turn into an issue, because you're right, and I remember when Lewan was drafted in 2014, Ken Wisenhunt was the head coach, and he talked about it. He said, you know, the idea is you don't want to draft this early very often, and this is the area where you can get a left tackle like this. So you better take advantage of it while you're here. And the Titans very much did that. So to your point, you're not going to be drafting early enough to get a guy like that.
Right.
Guys like that aren't just out there in free agency. I mean, it's a really interesting issue. Probably what you want to do if you're the Titans is sort of renegotiate, get his salary cap number down next year, and see, you know, give him sort of another year, and if he can bounce back a little bit better next year, then okay, then you ride with him a bit. If not, then you say, okay, thanks Taylor for everything, we appreciate it. Lewan is certainly lobbying to stay here. There's been numerous cases
like
in his dealings with the media lately where he talks about how appreciative he is of this franchise, and he understands what it means to play your career with one team, you know, like all this stuff. He's sending the message to John Robinson, like, please, I want to be here. I do want to be here. So it'll be I think John Robinson has made it clear that he can and will make the tough decisions when the times come.
The hits keep on coming for the Cleveland Browns. We talked earlier in the show about how COVID-19 is running through that locker room at the moment. Baker Mayfield has tested positive for COVID-19 as well. So now the quarterback.
Well, and what I see this morning, there are 7 teams now in advanced protocols in the NFL, which means virtual meetings, among other things. It's we'll see. Titans have had one guy each of the last 2 days. We'll see if their numbers start coming up this week. You feel like Mike Vrabel has been successful in sending the message that, you know, you guys have to do the right things to give yourselves a chance. And that, you know, this goes back to give Ryan Tannehill a little credit for, you know, being clear about the fact that he didn't want to get the vaccine, but he understood that it was it made the most sense from a football perspective in a lot of ways based on the league protocols, and it has saved this team a lot of drama, I think, along the way.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Get to more of your thoughts on our text line and on our streaming platforms as well. Coming up next, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So on 102.5 The Game this Sunday for the Bud Light Preds Watch Party at Headquarters Beercade. Drink specials. You can enter to win Preds tickets and watch the Preds take on the Carolina Hurricanes. Join us this Sunday at Headquarters Beercade, located at 114 2nd Avenue South downtown. The puck drops at 4 o'clock. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joined today by David Beauclair in for Joe Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's off doing some recruiting stuff today for some National Signing Day. I keep calling it National Signing Day. It's really not, but it kind of really is at this point.
He's on assignment.
He's on assignment.
I filled in for you, what, 2 weeks ago here. Now filling in for him.
So now what we're basically learning
is we're balancing the scales.
We never today. Work, is what you're saying. Robbie and Rex show never do their job. We're happy to
have
you
here. I'm here. I'm here every day.
That's right. Michelle's here
all
the time.
Michelle is here every day. Michelle is the glue.
That's right. Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ben says, you got to place them on the offensive line successfully. There are no excuses. I hear you. It's much easier said than done to replace Taylor Lewan, Roger Saffold on the offensive line. By the way, we're talking right now about, you know, how bad the pass blocking has been. What happens if you don't have a starting caliber left tackle next year? I mean, there's a lot of things they're going to have to figure out this offseason.
It's a the Titans have had some draft issues the last couple of years. They've overcome them, but the line is the one that I think they're really going to have to pay the piper at some point. This you know, things have not gone according to plan there, and they're gonna pay for it in some way, shape, or form here in the coming seasons.
What do you think of the AFC right now? We're talking so much about the one seed and whether or not the Titans can get healthy enough, can play well enough to get that coming down the stretch. But it's pretty incredible to watch right now. I mean, you've got the Buffalo Bills, who, as you mentioned earlier, everybody thought at one point this year they were going to be the representative in the Super Bowl. They're at 7-6. They're holding on by a thread right now for the playoff race. The Browns at 7-6, the Bengals, the Broncos there as well. This is a huge game for the Steelers coming up against the Titans on Sunday if they want to stay alive and hang in this thing. I don't know that there's an elite team in the AFC, although Kansas City is starting to look more and more like that. But this is a deep, deep conference in the playoff race right now. Like, even
11
Miami.
Teams. Yeah, 11 teams at 500 or better. And then you've got Vegas and Miami at 6-7 right behind them. I mean, Miami's won 5 in a row.
Yeah.
Like, they're due. They're gonna lay an egg here this week or next. Like, it's about that time. That's kind of the way it goes, you know, for young developing teams in the NFL. They're gonna come up short this year, I'm virtually certain. But credit to them for fighting out of an early hole, and you know, the whole should Tua be the guy or not mess. They've stayed with it pretty good there. But, you know, like, yeah, Cleveland is a team that also people thought was a legitimate Super Bowl contender. They're on the outside looking in right now. It's Indianapolis is, we talked about it earlier. Indianapolis is one that scares a lot of people, and rightfully so. But you know, if New England beats up on them this week, New England coming off their bye, but I guess both teams are coming off their open date finally. But that'll be a really, really telling contest, because Indianapolis is another one that has been left for dead a couple times this year.
Yep.
Including after the Titans beat them when they were 0-3, and here they are at 7-6, sixth in the conference right now. Because Indianapolis, you know, give them credit, they have won the right games. They're 6-3 in the conference. The only other teams in the AFC with 6 conference wins are Tennessee at 6-3 and New England at 7-1. So Indianapolis has helped themselves quite a bit from a tie-breaking perspective by winning the games they should win.
There's a big game coming up on Thursday between Kansas City and the Chargers. The Chargers are, I mean, you don't really know what you're going to get from them from week to week. It's like a lot of teams in the AFC this year, but
Chargers and the Bengals are the same thing to me. Like, I have no idea. Like, if I were a legitimate sports gambler, like, I would run and hide from those guys. Yeah. I would not mess with either one of them right now.
No, they, like, the Bengals, you count out, and then they'll just go, like, thrash the Ravens and then lose to the Jets.
Yeah.
That's what they do. It's pretty incredible to watch. But, L.A., we're talking so much about the Chiefs right now, but if the Chargers win this game, they'll have swept the Chiefs at that point.
And they'll be in first place.
And they'll be in first place in their division. I mean, it's crazy to think about just what this conference looks like right now. I will say, and I believe this even before, you know, the Lamar Jackson injury, I think we're about to see the Ravens tank a little bit. I still think they'll probably make the playoffs, but I don't know that they're going to be all that good once they get there. At some point, you run out of bodies.
Yeah, and they've done a pretty remarkable job this year. They lost their whole running back room before the season even started,
yeah.
and still have found a way to be really good. But they've had their share of injury issues as well. And if Lamar's not right or can't play the rest of the year, I mean, what do they have? It's just all of a sudden they don't scare you at all.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Matthew from Paris texting in. Beauclair's voice sounds a lot like Peter King. Has he ever been told that before?
I have not.
You ever been told you sound like Peter King?
No, that is a first. But
is that a good thing?
I'll take it because I hate my voice on the air. But
doesn't everybody though?
I guess so. Maybe that's a thing. Yeah, others have been complimentary of me, and I appreciate that because it helps on days like this.
Chris texting in, filling in for Joe nicely, calling it the open week rather than the bye week. Very nice. This is a big discussion that Rex Rode and I get into. He hates the term bye week, and I say it all the time just to make him mad.
Yeah, I'm a believer. It's not a bye. Like, a bye is in a tournament situation. You move on to the next round.
There we go.
It's
You are filling Joe's shoes very nicely with that answer, David.
It's the grouchy old man chair. What can I tell you?
Dennis texting in, might have to change the name of the show to Robbie or Rex Road if there's only going to be one of you here with a crying, right. Laughing emoji face. That is what we've learned today. Neither Rex Road or I work at all. Although, you know, Rex Road never sleeps. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. Beauclair, the Monday night football game, I think Joe, he finished writing his story, said it like 4 a.m., and then he just drove right to the studio. I came in, I said, Joe, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, I haven't slept yet. We're like, what?
Those days, I've had days like that in this business. Like, I remember putting out a newspaper all night, coming home, sleeping for 45 minutes, showering, going back to the office, and feeling fresh as a daisy. Those days are long gone. Yeah,
they don't make them like you guys anymore because I could not do that.
I mean, it is a weird thing to go home, get in, you know, like it was probably 7:30 in the morning or whatever it was. Set your alarm for 8:15, and then it goes off, and you wake up, and you actually feel good.
You're like, all right,
like you just and it's like 2 or 3 days later, then it hits you, and you're just useless at that point. But those are. You know, Mrs. Beauclair had an experience like that with you at Pancake Pantry last week, where she had to be down there at 3 a.m. to help set up all the shenanigans with their opening and the TV coverage that went with that. And she
tried to kill me too. I turned around and she had a plate full of pancakes in her hand handed it to me.
She's got better staying power for those sorts of things than I do these days.
Caleb on the text line, the Browns dealing with COVID doesn't really hurt their season because they're just not that good anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the Titans should be addressing tight end at some point in the draft or in the first round of the draft, and then the right side of the O-line. They should try to find a way to keep the left side for next year. So keeping on with Saffold and Lawan for next year and get a tight end in there.
Caleb says, just ride with the old men.
Keep going.
Yeah. All right. The tight end is, you know, Anthony Firkser has certainly underwhelmed this year.
Oh, yeah.
Like all the talk of he's going to replace Jonnu Smith and no. And that's no flaw in Anthony Firkser's character. Jonnu Smith's just a different guy, and Anthony Firkser is not him. But he had a step in the right direction Sunday.
When the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. Your next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45. We'll come back. We'll get to more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.